Good morning. This is Right Here, Right Now, brought to you by Right Choice Services. At Right Choice Services, we develop individualized programs to help clients find that book inside of them they have always wanted to write. And I'm your host, Tim Morrison. On Right Here, Right Now, we interview business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals about their work and the writing they engage in as a part of their work. My co-host and the producer of Right Here, Right Now is Kevin Finn. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning, Tim.
Are you ready for Halloween?
I am ready for Halloween. I did some pre-Halloween celebration with my girlfriend this weekend. And now, Wednesday, me and my friends are going to go out, have a party, watch some horror movies.
Do you have a costume?
I am going as a geek. Overalls, glasses, and everything. Something close to my heart.
There you go. And so you just said over the air that you have a girlfriend, so you're out of the mainstream of being available.
I am out of the mainstream of being available. That is true.
Okay. And we'll keep that in mind. Okay. You know, most people who actually start writing a book never finish writing it. And you got to wonder if it's procrastination as a major factor. I like to say sometimes it's not enough butt glue in the chair, or perhaps it's that combined with the fear of failure. Procrastination can impact just about every aspect of our lives. We may call it something else, but at its heart, it is procrastination. So how can we better recognize it in our lives? And when we do, how do we overcome it? Well, Dr. Michelle Tullier is in the studio with me to discuss her book, The Complete Idiot's Guide to Overcoming Procrastination. Now, this is only one of 8 books that Michelle has written. She is also a regional vice president for a leading global consulting firm where she manages career coaching and employee development solutions for major corporations. And amidst that all, she found time to write. Welcome, Dr. Tullier.
Thank you, Tim. Very glad to be here.
It's good to have you with us. So which came first, the corporate career or being an author?
Really simultaneous, which is probably not the best way to do it. Certainly a challenge, but I'd say in terms of interest level, I knew very early on in my career, as early as in my 20s and entry-level roles in the career counseling field, that I wanted to write books.
Wow. And you did it. It wasn't you didn't just think about it, you did it.
Right.
And so you are not one of those who thought about it, got started, and never finished.
That's right. Because in all the cases, I found a publisher first. And that's the nice thing, you know, about business and nonfiction writing is that you don't necessarily write the whole manuscript first. Mm-hmm. You find somebody who's actually going to publish it, unless you're choosing self-publishing, which is a great option.
Yeah. You did it the right way. You are probably the first guest I've had on who did it the right way. That's exciting. So would you describe your 8 books as being from the same genre?
Most are. The procrastination book is probably a little bit off the track of the others, in that the others were all more directly related to career planning and job search. Mm-hmm. And those were most directly related to my own professional background. But along the way, I was doing, when I lived in New York for 10 years in the 90s, I was on the faculty at New York University in their continuing education program and would occasionally teach some courses on time management or mm-hmm. overcoming procrastination because it was just an interest of mine and something I like to help people with. So from that, the interest in writing about procrastination came about. So the Complete Idiot's Guide to Overcoming Procrastination that just came out last month was the first edition was published about 12 years ago.
Wow. So this is sizzling hot in my hand, right?
Right.
Now, your background, you do have a PhD, and mm-hmm. It is in
counseling psychology from the Graduate School of Education at UCLA, but with also a complementary focus from the business school there on mm-hmm. organizational behavior. So I had always focused on counseling, but more from the standpoint of individuals developing their careers within an organization or just on their own.
So you're native Atlantan.
Yes, yes.
Your parents are from New Zealand. Did I hear that right?
From Louisiana.
Oh, Louisiana.
Sounds similar.
Well, that's the hearing aids. Louisiana.
It's not too far off.
Yeah. Close.
You
enough.
Went to
those southern, right?
Yeah, you went to the, as some people say, the left coast.
Yes.
Lived in New York.
Right.
Have you had to do any work on yourself to keep your head straight after all of that?
And college in New England at Wellesley, so I was outside of Boston for 4 years. So I've really hit every coast and then ended up back in Atlanta.
I'm just going to guess that when you were at Wellesley, it was all girls.
It is, and it still is.
It still is.
Yep. Part of the Seven Sisters colleges.
Yeah, well, I know
colleges.
The Seven Sisters.
Yes.
I went to Lehigh, and Lehigh was all male.
Oh,
literally until the semester after I left.
Oh.
Man, that must have been
I think there was
what
a connection.
Timing?
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But actually, you know, I was intentional about going to an all-male college because I didn't want to be distracted.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I graduated in January of 71, and in the spring semester of 71, women were allowed into the undergraduate program. So
do you think you would have graduated if there were women there distracting you?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you a funny story about my time at Wellesley. I go off to an all-women's college. Freshman year, there were three or four men living on the floor of living on my dorm on the same floor.
Oh.
Because we had a 12 college exchange program with Dartmouth and University of Massachusetts and Amherst, I think, several, 12 colleges up there.
Well, mom
so
and
men
dad
would come to Wellesley. They were, mom and dad were thrilled. When I write home.
I can imagine. Yeah. I can imagine. What was the catalyst to writing The Complete Idiot's Guide?
Well, first of all, I love to explain things in writing and help people get over hurdles and challenges in their lives through writing.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I'm here on the radio, but talking is really not my talent. So thank you for pulling me through this today. I love to write, and I love to explain it in writing. So, from the courses I had taught at NYU to the general public, not to students, this was through the School of Continuing Education, the evening programs, I found that as I was teaching these seminars on how to get past procrastination, that there was so much more I wanted to say that you really couldn't cover in a 45-minute or hour-long workshop. So just started getting some ideas down on paper, and little by little I started to see that I had the makings of a book,
mm-hmm.
and approached a publisher about it and proposed it, put together a formal proposal, as mm-hmm. one often needs to do.
Yeah.
And
And this is part of the Complete Idiot's Guide whole series?
Exactly, the series. There are hundreds, maybe even now thousands of titles within the Idiot's Guide series. And, because I had already published some other books at the time and had a couple of publishers that I had a relationship with, I considered going to them. But for a topic like this, I thought, what better topic than the Complete Idiot's Guide series? Because mm-hmm. even the smartest person feels like a complete idiot when they can't get themselves to do something, to start it or to finish it. So I thought that this, and I just, and then researched, and this is, I think, helpful for anyone looking to publish a book and choosing to do it through a publisher, not self-publishing, really research what else that has,
mm-hmm.
And does this fit? First of all, obviously don't propose a book that they already have on that topic,
mm-hmm.
but also see, does it fit within what they have? And I was very surprised at the time that the Idiot's Guide series did not have a book on this topic. They had they had time management, they had organizing books, but they didn't have procrastination specifically. So luckily they responded quickly and really wanted to do it.
And were willing to do a revision then, too.
That's right. That's right. It was about time. A lot of the advice in it is timeless because mm-hmm. that's, human beings have always kind of been the same when it comes to how we can sort of mess up our lives, and not get things done.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously it needed needed a lot of updating the areas of technology and how that has an impact on our procrastinating, either helping or hurting us, and some other areas that needed updating.
When you're talking with folks about your book, what surprises you the most, if anything, in terms of questions they'll ask you or maybe lack of understanding?
Sure. I think the most common thing I hear is that is that people have the mistaken idea that procrastination comes from just a sort of one-sided track. Procrastination usually comes from a pretty complex mix of both situational external causes as well as our own, you know, internal issues, mm-hmm. the psychological side of procrastination. So often people who are trying to help themselves get past it, or those who even write books on it, usually focus on one or the other. You know, the external is, well, get yourself organized, declutter your life, literally and metaphorically speaking, and you'll be able to move forward and be productive. Or the focus is all on internal. It's fear of failure. It's fear of success. It's perfectionism. You know, it's this or that psychological hang-up that keeps you from doing it. And that's unfortunate, because you really need to look at both, because rarely is it just one or the other. Probably, I'd venture to say, almost never.
And your approach is both.
Exactly.
How did you come up with that concept? Was it out of your own experience, your own research? What?
A combination of factors. Certainly research on looking at so many studies that have been done over the years, you know, which are reflected in the book, but because this is meant to be a very practical, easily applied book, it's not laden mm-hmm. with, you know, mm-hmm. scholarly data. But my own reading and research, you know, went into that. I also did, both for the original first edition years back and this more recent one, did a survey of individuals on what they procrastinate about and you know, where they think it comes from. So did a little bit of my own research as well. And then I think it probably just comes from my own background of you know, having the doctorate in psychology, so that's always where my thinking's going to go about, mm-hmm. well, certainly that must be the reason for these problems, is something going on in our heads.
Absolutely. Or not.
Or not going on in our heads, right. But then also having such a kind of practical, applied side to my own career in terms of helping people navigate their lives within organizations or within their own career path, and wanting to be real practical about it and seeing, you know, sometimes it isn't so much what we do in our own heads to play mind games to keep us from being productive. It's often just simple situational or environmental factors.
Mm-hmm. That, to me, is just amazing. I had all those problems in high school, and that actually led to me having a really hard high school because I would procrastinate everything, and no one ever gave me an option. All my teachers kept telling me was, you're really intelligent, you can do better. But it was a serious problem, and if I had a book like this, it would have helped me out immensely. So
I know. I wish you had. Yeah, and that, you know, and what they were, I'm sure they meant well, but they were really putting more pressure on you, and that doesn't work. You know, that's like anything in life.
No,
you tell the smoker, you know, stop smoking or it'll kill you. Well, obviously they know that. and they're still not stopping. Yeah. So, you know, so putting more pressure on somebody just doesn't help.
It made me rebel more. I became a real smart ass or smart butt or whatever we'll let it say on the air.
So you're going to run out and buy a copy today, right?
Oh, yeah. You keep on bringing people through here that have to buy more and more books. So.
Well, you know, I had the same kind of reaction as you shared, Kevin, when I began to read the book. Mm-hmm. Now, Michelle was nice enough to have her publisher provide me with a copy, and I actually read it.
I did.
What that obviously means is when that happens with other guests, I don't necessarily read it, but that's the truth. But I read it, and I got hooked. Right away.
Good.
And what hooked me was your so inclusive explanation of what procrastination is. And that's why I've been mm-hmm. pushing you with mm-hmm. these early questions, because mm-hmm. it is a whole lot more than just, oh, I'll do it tomorrow.
Right, right. It really is. You do have to stop and say, what am I saying to myself in my head that mm-hmm. could be causing this? Or what are others around me doing? And, mm-hmm. you know, I always bring it back to just the simple old phrase of people, places, and things. You've got to take stock in those three areas to say, where are the problems? Mm-hmm. What's doing this to me?
Well, the first set of notes that I took were where you discuss the irrational thought, the negative emotional reaction, and mm-hmm. to balance that or separate it out and replace it with a rational thought and positive mm-hmm. emotional reaction.
Exactly.
See, I read it.
Well, thank you. You did.
So there's a topic. Talk about that a little bit,
yeah.
Would you please?
Yeah. Well, and that comes a great deal from, you know, a very popular and tried and true effective method in psychotherapy, which is cognitive behavioral psychotherapy, as well as the rational emotive approaches. All of that is basically to say what we think and what we feel has a huge impact on how we act. And we know it has an impact on our thoughts and feelings because that's what
Absolutely.
They are.
Yeah.
But you've got to, you have to take it the next step and say, okay, how is this affecting what I do, or in this case, what I don't do?
Mm-hmm.
And so the, you know, some of the keys to procrastination are looking at what your thoughts are, your cognitions. And with those are usually messages we have running through our head. And I experience this all the time myself. I always say just because I wrote the book on how not to procrastinate doesn't mean I don't do it or start to feel the temptation to do it. And so I know what these messages sound like. Now, maybe I'm the only person walking around with voices in my head, but, you know.
You're the only one that's willing to put it in print.
That's right. That's right. But I think that we all say these things, and sometimes they're so etched in our minds that we don't realize it. So you have mm-hmm. to stop and listen to yourself. And so, you know, you can be sitting at your desk on any work day and look at something you need to do, an email you need to answer, a report you need to start writing, and listen to what you say to yourself about it. Really simple things like, I can do that later. I don't want to do that now. I don't have what I need for that now. I need to do that later. Or these other things are more important. So it's all a matter of just listening and thinking, well, wait a minute, and questioning yourself. You have to push back yourself, play devil's advocate, say, well, wait, mm-hmm. why? And my favorite retort to that is to say to yourself, why not now? And usually there's no good reason. And you know,
oh, darn.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah. Normally I have the same problem. Normally it's something so simple as responding to an email that'll take you less than 2 minutes to do, but you'll say, no, I'll do it later. And then you end up forgetting about it and don't do it, and it affects
That's
poorly
right.
On your image to people because you don't respond in a quick fashion or you don't solve the problem right away, and it just swells and gets bigger and bigger.
Yeah, well, absolutely.
One of the pieces that grabbed my attention, as you know, you talk about emails, and several times in the book you'll say, so how many emails do you have in your inbox right now?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I know I have more than I want. I have
right.
my excuse. But I'll tell you what happened to me, again, is the effect of reading your book. I'm one of those who, I still have clients' files on my computer.
Mm-hmm.
Their books have been out for a year, mm-hmm. year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
There really is no need for me to keep them there. And so
right.
I'm going to have an eraser party here.
Good, yeah. good.
Yeah. In fact, I looked at my delete folder.
Uh-huh.
I got 4,400, and all I need to do is go up there and hit delete.
That's right. Don't forget to empty that folder, because that's also when, depending on the particular email system you use and your overall computer mm-hmm. system, that's one of those things that also starts to clog it up. You'll be having a busy day, and all of a sudden you realize you're not receiving emails because your mailbox is full.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily your inbox. Maybe you've cleared that out, but you have your deleted mail folder, your sent mail folder, and it never fails. It happens at a time when you're really busy or you're accessing mail from your phone, and it's harder to clear those things out.
So what do you advise people? Here's a chance for you to plug it some more.
In terms of overall procrastination?
Well,
or just for the email specifically?
Let's start with the computer, the email.
Oh, yeah,
and all that.
Certainly, certainly. You know, I think Kevin's point was good in that you have to keep control of it in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now there's one thing to, you know, go in and do a big clean sweep of it when things have piled up, when email is piled up or other files on your computer that need to be cleared out. So one is just to keep up with it day to day. Now, that's not always realistic. Certainly, there are going to be those days when you just can't, and it gets real disorganized and cluttered. But, you know, Kevin, I think your point was good in terms of how quick and easy it would be to reply to a particular email,
mm-hmm.
or think about how quick and easy it would be to delete something. But we often build things up in our head to be a bigger deal than they are. So you have to say to yourself, how long will this really take me? By the time I sit here and say to myself, no, I'm going to do that later. I don't have time. I need to do all these other things. You could have answered the email, or you could have deleted it, or you could have moved it to a place where you filed them. So that's one. But the other is sometimes you haven't been doing that, and so things pile up. And before you know it, you can't find anything. And that's really the key here. I mean, this is not, I always say, just because I'm a neat freak and sort of compulsive about having to have things uncluttered and organized, not everybody's that way. And I don't expect everyone to be that way. A lot of people just feel happier in life when they do have a lot of stuff around them and when their computer desktop has lots of stuff on it and their email box is nice and full. That's okay, as long as you can still get things done. But inevitably, that starts to slow you down, because when you need to work on a project, or say you want to write a book, you need to find certain information, and you can't because you have so much to fish through. So you really do periodically need to go through and do like a spring cleaning or a fall or winter summer cleaning, and just get it cleared out. And you know, having a good organizational system for your email and email that you need to save, as well as your regular old files, documents, spreadsheets, whatever it is that you keep, that's key, because it's just like in your house. Think about when you have a place for things, it's so much easier to put them away than when you don't really have a place for things, or that place is real crowded, a closet or a drawer that's just stuffed. So you don't really feel like putting it away because it's just too much of a hassle. And you know things are going to fall on your head if you open the door. So it's the same with our computers.
I'm feeling very exposed.
You have one of those closets?
Well, yeah.
Or garage, no, or attic.
I have a closet in my home office that is just, it is the receptacle for everything, I'll get to it later. Later hasn't arrived yet.
That's right.
But it's a lot closer after having read your book.
Well, good.
I hope I don't embarrass myself again, but you talk about your daughter in here, don't you?
And yes. Well, the book is dedicated to her.
Yeah.
Alexandra, I'll clean my room tomorrow, gazelle. She will be thrilled that I've now further memorialized her as,
absolutely,
as a procrastinating teenager.
Oh, yeah. But she would text you, right? Or email you?
Oh, yes. While I was trying to write this edition of this book, yes. And she was distracting me. Yeah.
And she was in the house too.
Oh, yes. Yes.
That's the piece I just.
Yeah.
My son, when he was still he was home for the summer from college. Mm-hmm. And he was up in the computer room working, and I was preparing dinner, and my cell phone went off, and I looked at it. And it was Sean calling me from upstairs.
Yes.
And I hadn't experienced that before.
Right. I know.
You know, for on air, we're just going to say, what do you want?
Exactly. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And my home office is next to her bedroom. So she was texting from, a couple of feet away. So
I would go on the hand and say that texting is a procrastinator's best friend, because it makes you feel like you're doing progress. You have to contact someone. So you send a text message just like, hey, whatever, you contacted them, and it might take them hours, maybe even a day to respond, but you feel good. That's sent out when you could have just picked up the phone and called them and got all your work done instead of having a really long conversation back and forth.
That's right. That's right.
I'm going to give you an all-purpose question here, and that is, what do you want to tell us about the book, as opposed to what I've been asking?
Yes. Well, what you've been asking, that is the things that I like to talk about with it, because I think these are all real issues people deal with. I think we've had a good discussion around where it comes from, the external and some of the internal factors. Maybe what to do about it.
Well, that would be good. Let's talk about that. What do you do?
Yeah, because I think that's really, that's the crux of it. That's why people read the book, and I hope they'll read the book, because that's where it can make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly in the book I go into specific areas that we procrastinate in, and some specific tips for things, whether it's at home, at work, in school, big goals in your life, whatever the specific issue is that you have with procrastination. But aside from those areas, there are several main things that people need to do to be able to be more productive. And one is certainly how we look at time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you mentioned a moment ago, Tim, about later, and later never comes. And that's one of the mm-hmm. biggest issues with any kind of procrastination. And I would think especially for your listeners who want to write books, mm-hmm. who are starting one and can't get it started or haven't or can't get the, you know, build the momentum once they get it going. And you have to be realistic about time because in many cases our lives are real busy mm-hmm. With work or running businesses or managing families and households. And the time is not just going to materialize. And it's, you know, one of the things I learned from so much of the reading I did of research that's been done over the years about procrastination is that, you know, it is so much human nature for us to seek comfort, to seek pleasure, to do things that are easier. Now, that doesn't mean that we're all destined to be lazy human beings who mm-hmm. don't really want to do anything. No, we get a great deal of pleasure and satisfaction out of accomplishing something. But hey, when you're faced with a task that seems painful, mm-hmm. that seems difficult, we often are very tempted to take the easy route and say, I'm not going to do it, or I'll do it later. Or it's just not interesting to us. So therefore, we can't really rely on ourselves to have the wherewithal to say, I am going to find the time to do this. I'm going to make later come today.
Boy, that's heavy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, think about it. Do we go around doing that? Typically not. So, you know, for example, when I've written my books over the years, I often schedule vacation time. Now, not everybody necessarily wants to use, if they're employed, you know, in some organization and they have paid vacation time, that may not be the way they want to use their vacation time. Mm-hmm. And I certainly don't use every day of my vacation time writing books. There's spring break and there's time at the holidays and all those good things. But I will take a series of long weekends okay. because I know that if I have been working all day, first of all, I'm not going to get up early in the morning and do it. Mm-hmm. Maybe someone is a morning person and they can do that. So I'm not saying don't do it, but it's not me. And at the end of the day, even being the night person that I am, I'm often kind of wiped out.
Mm-hmm.
And so you need to kind of find your own rhythms in terms of time and mm-hmm. be realistic and say time isn't just going to magically materialize. Wow. I really have to make it. Now, we don't make time, but we can make the most of how we use it. So we can schedule it and say, this is going to be the time I'm going to work on my book, or I'm going to work on whatever it is, whatever project you need to be doing.
And that was one question I was going to ask you, so you've already answered it, but to emphasize it again, is you find the time.
That's right. That's right. You do.
Whatever works. Right?
Exactly. You have to make conditions work in your favor. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't expect that your energy level's going to be there when you do find a few moments to sit down and do something. You can't expect that the distractions won't come, that the fires won't come to put out, in your work, mm-hmm. in your home life, whatever it is. You can't count on that. So you have to, it's sort of like allowing for traffic when you leave to go somewhere.
In Atlanta.
Yeah, exactly. You just have to know that you know, the best laid plans aren't always going to work as planned. So, mm-hmm. you know, kind of factor in those for those contingencies.
So here's the real big question I have. How do you get, especially to our listeners, I'm pretty sure we have a bunch of procrastinating listeners.
Mm-hmm.
How do you get a procrastinator to buy a book about procrastinating and not put it off to another day?
I like that.
Yeah. You can imagine the jokes I've heard over the years of if I had a nickel for every time someone said, oh, I want to read your book, I want to buy it, I'll get around to it. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Now, but let me tell you something interesting. Of the 8 books that I have written and published, as well as a few that I've been a ghostwriter of, and I do get royalties for those. The Complete Idiot's Guide to Overcoming Procrastination, I can't speak to the current edition that's just out a month, but the first edition that came out actually 12 years ago has been my best-selling book of all the ones I've written.
Wow,
that's awesome.
And, you know, it has continued, even that old edition has continued to sell. Now, I hope people aren't buying the old edition thinking it's the new one.
Let them buy whatever, you know.
Right, hey, that's fine. I've always found that interesting. And you know, you could factor in some, is it the particular publisher? Is it because when you write for a major series like The Complete Idiot's Guide, the whole series kind of carries itself? You know, bookstores love to stock that series, and there's good publicity for it. But, you know, I don't think that that's a major, major factor. Some of my other books have been through some major, out of some major publishers mm-hmm. with pretty decent PR for them. So I'm always amazed that this just keeps selling. Now, not in droves. I'm not, you know, off living on my yacht and, you know. And,
you're not
and,
John Grisham.
Right. Yeah.
I understand.
But a nice steady trickle. So I think, and I think it speaks to the nature of the problem. Mm-hmm. I think it speaks to how frustrating it is to procrastinate and feel you cannot get yourself to do something, to start it or to finish it.
What are the major differences between this revised edition mm-hmm. and the first one? Mm-hmm.
Certainly the technology chapter is the biggest because we talk not just about email, but also about you know, just the expectations of what we can get accomplished.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people are coming at you in all sorts of ways now, and we're connecting with people in all sorts of ways, and we can be so much more productive because of technology, and yet that sets us up sometimes for a bit of a disaster when it comes to procrastinating because it's overwhelming, and we kind of shut down sometimes. Some of the other areas are, you know, it's interesting, and you know this, Tim, from your own writing and coaching others on writing, is that when you go back and read through something you've written in the past, you say, oh, I should have said it this way, or mm-hmm. I've learned more now, mm-hmm. or there's more research now that you know, slightly changes this. So it was wonderful to be able to revise even the parts that you wouldn't think would become out of date,
mm-hmm.
but to know that there was a better way to do it. This book is also a little more concise. There's been a movement. The first edition was much longer. And yet this still includes all of the core information.
The critical stuff.
So I had to be, it was a real exercise in how to write and being much more concise. And
paucity of words.
Yes, yes.
And that's one of the things that's happening is, and I'm sure you're aware of it, that we talk about an airplane book, which is a mm-hmm. book that can be read pretty much in its whole as you're on an airplane flight.
Right, right.
And that's what I run into with a lot of my clients. I have a client right now who first book, 250 pages. And I said, no, You have about 30,000 words to cut. I might as well mm-hmm. have handed her a knife and said, cut out your heart. And I said, you know, you've got a choice. It's either do that or publish the book and just sit and watch it sit there collecting dust.
Yeah. That's true.
What I like is triggers my let's go about this logically.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I hesitate to say that because I don't want people to throw a logical book, but I like the way you dissect it, you know, the whys, the what's, the woes of procrastination, and then from that you go into the path to becoming an ex procrastinator.
Mm-hmm.
And let's get it done already.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
So you lay it out and you help us see, oh, that's me.
Mm-hmm.
But then, I can overcome this.
Right.
I think another strength that I appreciated in the book is you do use humor and you make yourself the brunt of the humor so often.
Mm-hmm.
And that is delightfully refreshing.
Well, thank you. That's, you know, and that's one of the nice things about writing for the Complete Idiots Guide series is they really encourage that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't take yourself too seriously. Don't make the writing too serious. So it was really fun to be able to kind of let loose and be a little funny and use some examples of my own struggles with procrastination or anonymously with those of friends and family or colleagues I've worked with over the years. Some of whom have read the book and recognized themselves.
Oh, have they?
Yeah.
Did you have any who knew you were writing that and say, am I in that book?
Well, yes. And, you know, and as part of the surveys I did, both for this edition and the first edition, you know, I had told people that I would not be mentioning them by name, but mm-hmm. I did ask if any, you know, had concerns about my quoting them in ways that could reveal who they are. And I did have, you know, on kind of a serious note, I did have a couple of people who say, I feel like an imposter in my life and in my work. I'm you know, providing you with this information because I want to help provide good mm-hmm. content for the book and you know, help you understand, you know, what people out here are really doing in procrastination. But they were real concerned about any quotes
Sure.
Or anecdotes revealing who they were, because they really go through life feeling like they're always just one step behind and people don't realize it, and one day it's going to catch up with them.
Boy, I had that feeling for so long in my previous career. Don't have that so much anymore.
Good.
I'd like to take you back to what I raised earlier, because I just liked it so much.
Okay.
The irrational thought, the negative emotional reaction, and swapping that out for something else.
That's right. We talked a little about the unproductive, kind of destructive messages we say to ourselves. So what the first step is to recognize those, as I said, stop and listen to yourself and listen to what these kind of pre-programmed recordings are in your head that you don't even realize you're saying to yourself. And then think about ways to replace those. So the first was that, if not now, when? Or why not now? But the others relate more to these things we say to ourselves that do, they make us feel bad about ourselves. I never get anything done, or I'm just not that kind of person, or I'm not the kind of person who reaches my goals. Because remember, procrastination is not just about taking out the trash promptly.
Mm-hmm.
It's about reaching big goals in life, things that might take years.
That's the thing that hit me between the eyes, is it's those goals.
Right.
Go ahead.
Right, yeah. So in particular with those, I mean, yes, we may beat ourselves up for not taking the trash out before it starts to smell a little off color. But you know, in the big scheme of life, as long as we don't do that too much, it's not the end of the world. But the issues of not reaching our goals, not accomplishing the things that we want to do and that we're capable of, that is just plain sad when that happens. And that's also the areas we often are more likely to procrastinate, because there's so much time involved. You're talking months or years, and so many ways to get derailed. And so there's so much time for us to send these messages to ourselves, our emotions and our cognitions, that are not doing us any good. And then if you add to it, if you have external factors of people around you who are either not being supportive or are just taking up your time in ways that are not real valuable, or who are trying to be supportive and mean well, but it really comes across as nagging, or as Kevin said, things that just make you rebel, say, well, I'm not going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So you got all this mixed together, and you have to stop and say, okay, wait a minute. I want to accomplish these things. What do I need to do to get there? Now, there's the practical piece of making sure you have the tools and the resources and the information and the people and the whatever, the all the wherewithal to get it done. But all that is useless if you don't have, if your head isn't screwed on the right way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so some of the messages that you may need to replace the negative ones with are, yeah, I can do this. And, you know, it's hard at when talking about this not to go into just kind of corny affirmations like posters on the walls of 90% of offices around the country, you know, you can do it, and, you know, climb that mountain. But you know, there's a reason that all of those phrases circulate, because they do help. And when people, you know, wake up every day and say, what do I need to do to get to where I want to be? And I know I can do it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when that sounds like, you know, I know that it's easy to hear that and say, well, great, but that still doesn't necessarily translate into doing it. Another trick is to look into your past or even your present life and say, when did I accomplish something? Maybe it's a completely other track in life from what you're trying to accomplish now, but when did I get something done? When did I reach a goal? When did I achieve something I was proud of? And kind of, you know, bask in that glory a little bit.
And that I really want to affirm. I've reached one of those points again that I've had one too many Twinkies. You know, my immediate reaction, yeah, I just got so much weight to lose. Why even start? But the other side of that is I've lost it before. I can do it again.
Exactly.
And that's the kind of thing you're after, isn't it?
Absolutely. You look for these evidence in your own life of your past experiences, getting something done, making something happen, and reaching a goal.
Mm-hmm.
And now, but Tim, do you ever say to yourself, oh, but here I go again. Why didn't I just keep it off? Why, you know, because a lot of people do that, and it keeps them from trying again.
I don't go there. I go, oh, what the, you know.
Right.
anything.
Let it all hang out.
It's, yeah.
Halloween's coming. Lots of Reese's peanut butter cups to eat. Yeah.
But I also understand that one of my primary challenges all my life has been I'm an emotional eater. Mm-hmm, you know, fill that void that never gets filled.
Right.
And that's that is another element why I really enjoyed The Complete Idiot's Guide, because you do bring in, you know, and I have talked with people and I've done growth programs and I've done web seminars, you know, all of that stuff. And I don't want to sound flippant because they all helped me. But I never had taken those kinds of concepts and connected it to procrastination.
Right.
And that's what I find so powerful.
Yeah. It really is very similar concepts and techniques that you would use for anything, whether it's weight loss, stopping smoking, stopping or cutting back on drinking, what, you know, whatever it is that somebody feels is interfering with their life, because it's habit. Now, I won't go into the whole, for some things there can be kind of a biochemical component. We won't go there. But much of what we do in life that we want to make changes with is habit. And that's what procrastination is. We've just gotten into patterns of behaving in a certain way or not behaving, not acting. And so it's a matter of figuring out what, when are there times when we didn't have this habit? What are there, what areas of my life do I not do this in? And then move forward from there.
That's just awesome. I just wanted to say I know a couple of my friends, what I'm getting them for Christmas now.
Oh, good. Great, great.
Right,
yeah. I think there are a lot of people who could use it.
I do a lot of volunteer work with job seeker groups. I teach them how to write resumes. And the reason I bring that up is I was talking with some friends the other day who have also been involved with some of the similar job seeker group. And there's... there are whiners. I know this will be hard to believe, but there are whiners there, which after having read your book, you know, they're procrastinators. Now, the company you work with, you don't necessarily deal with the job seeker, but the almost soon-to-be job seeker.
Right.
How do you see this book? I know I'm going into gray area here.
No, that's okay.
But... what do the downsized person, the job seeker, what's your experience say to that individual about how are they procrastinating and aren't calling it that?
Sure. I've seen that a great deal over the years. I mean, the early years of my career after getting my graduate degrees in psychology were focused on career counseling. And yes, sometimes those were people who were in active job search mode and sometimes were not, and just maybe considering making a change. And then with the organization I'm with now, for many years I was in a consultant or coach role where I was working individually. And we do work with people through their job search, through their career transition. We're not headhunters. We're not placing them. But we're making them as strong of a candidate as they can be for the positions they want to go after, and helping connect them with the marketplace, with networking and so forth. And now I'm in a role where I manage the people who are doing that and help design the programs that do that. So, yeah, so I have a lot of experience with this. And probably at the resume stage is the most common place where you see the procrastination, because when you know that somebody is on version 19 of their resume editing with their consultant, they may need to call it a day, wrap it up, say this resume is in good shape, and let's move on and get out there and network and search online and contact recruiters and so forth, whatever their strategy is going to be.
Or comes the phrase, there's something missing in this document.
Yeah.
No, there isn't.
That's right.
You know, it's called your motivation.
Exactly.
Well, when people see you coming, do they run?
Sometimes, yes.
Yeah, well, here comes that procrastination lady. I'm exposed to the world.
That's right. You know, they do, but I always, and this is why I'm glad you saw this when you read the book, that I try to let it come through that I'm one of them.
Yes.
You know, that we all fall victim to this. Mm-hmm. And I'd be really surprised if anybody claims that they never procrastinate, that if they really mean it, because again, it is kind of human nature for us to be sort of the pleasure seeking, not the pain seeking.
Mm-hmm.
And so so we do it, and I do it.
And while we're in the confession mode here, you know, for the longest of time, until I read your book, I had bluffed myself into saying, you know, 3 or 4 games of Free Cell before I move on to the next project is going to really clear my head.
You said
it's when I get to the eighth or ninth
right.
that I know it's not head clearing.
You said the magic word. FreeCell is probably my favorite online game.
And
yes. I mean, I have to. Well, and that's where, you know, one of the tips I put in the chapter on dealing with procrastination and technology is, if you are fortunate enough to have more than one computer, or maybe you have a laptop or a you know, a pad computer mm-hmm. versus the one you use for most of your business or your job, keep it separate. Now, that does, yeah, I mean, you can actually go in there, of course, and block sites and, you know, make it so that technically it's absolutely impossible to get into something. But for the most part, just have a rule. You don't do this on your work computer. You know, maybe that's the computer you're trying to write a book on. Maybe it's your actual job or your business. So in my home office, I have my company, and I work from home most of the time because even though I'm employed by a company, my role stretches from here to from Atlanta to Western New York State and lots of locations in between. So really my life is, actually I'm a professional emailer is what I call my job.
I see. You know, okay.
And conference call participant. So I work from home most of the time. So I have my company issued computer and on a desk where I sit and do my day job, my full-time job every day. And then across the room, I have another smaller desk with my laptop that is my personal computer. And I allow myself, sometimes at night, sometimes it's a nice way to kind of wind down rather than reading a book in bed, allow myself to get on and play FreeCell and Mahjong and then call it a day. But never, ever do I go across the room and sit there at the personal computer during the workday.
Boy,
or do those things from my personal computer. So
that's discipline. Yeah.
Well, it is very difficult. But you know, it's just an example of setting ourselves up for success rather than failure. You know, putting conditions in place so that the temptations are not as much there.
Well, let me give you a chance to give a couple pieces of advice. Mm-hmm. One is, what advice would you give to those who are considering writing a book?
Mm-hmm.
And then segue that into, what advice would you give to our listeners to help them recognize their procrastination?
Sure. For considering writing a book, my favorite piece of advice is really fundamental. Make sure it's a viable project. Make sure that you want to do it, that there is an audience for it. You know, unless you're looking to do something that's just going to be shared, you know, photocopied and shared or sent digitally to your family and friends. But if you're talking about writing a book where you really hope people will buy it, or where you hope it will be a valuable giveaway if you're out giving talks or something related to your business, selling a product, make sure it's viable.
Okay.
Because so often people have, and I'm sure you've seen this, Tim, with your coaching of people on this, is that what you have here is not a book. What you have here is maybe some blog posts. Maybe it's some advice to talk to people about. Maybe it's an essay, an article. It's not a book.
Mm-hmm.
And make sure that it is appealing to everybody, that it's not just because you find it interesting or you think you have something to say about a topic. And as I have kind of informally coached budding authors over the years, I just believe in sort of tough love. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like this really has to stand up to scrutiny of a publisher wanting to invest tens of thousands of dollars in this book to put it out, or yourself to invest your own money to self-publish it. So that's number one. But so let's say it passes that test, and this is something that really has some potential. Then it is a matter of figure out your own style. And in fact, I'll answer your two questions in one, because the things that help with procrastination in any area of life help with procrastination with starting or finishing a book. So the first is, I won't go into detail because I already talked about the time. Find the time.
Mm-hmm.
Schedule it. Book it on your calendar. Don't just expect it to miraculously appear in any given day to get it done. The other is, find your own rhythm. And this especially relates to writing, but it also relates to any project. There are those people who want to chip away at something and say, I'll spend 15 minutes a day doing this, and before you know it, after X number of months or years, I'll have a book or I'll have this other project done. There are others who work more in kind of solid, intense bursts of inspiration. So, I mean, and that's me. That's why I take vacation time and say, I'm going to work on this practically round the clock. I mean, when I get into that mode, I don't even want to sleep. And, you know, for X number of days, I'm going to work on this. Then I'm going to put it aside and not think about it for 2 weeks. So you have to figure out your own rhythm and what works for you on any type of project, but especially writing. And then it's stop, look, and listen. Stop and say, kind of push the pause button on yourself when you're about to procrastinate, whether it's writer's block coming in or not cleaning up the kitchen or not writing a complex report for your job. Whatever it is, stop, pause. Because habits are impulses. You know, we're so conditioned to act impulsively about things. So pause and then look and listen. Look around and say, what do I need to be able to get this done? What's not working here? Could be as simple as you're trying to write and you're not comfortable. Your room's too hot. Your desk chair's too stiff. You know, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Make all conditions right so that you'll be comfortable doing something. Or am I, you know, too cluttered? I can't find the papers I need to write this report or whatever it may be. And then listen to the messages in your own head, those emotions, oh, I can't do this, I'm just not this kind of person, or I'm afraid of what will happen if I do it or I don't do it, as well as the thoughts. Mm-hmm. You know, this is not the right time, that's too big of a project, can't do it now, I'll do it later, and replacing those. So the stop, look, and listen method, I'd say, is probably if I had to boil down everything I say in the book and I've ever said in coaching or teaching people about overcoming procrastination, it's stop, look, and listen. You know, the good old crossing the street advice that little kids get.
Sure.
That's what does it.
And it makes so much sense. So people want to be in contact with you. They want to ask about your book, maybe even about your business, your writing journey. How do they do that?
Sure. Well, if I hadn't procrastinated about putting a website together, they could. No, that has been a conscious choice. What I've done, I welcome the contact. If for anyone who is on Facebook, and even if they're not on it personally in terms of just friends networks, but want to follow books and businesses on Facebook, I have a page, Complete Idiot's Guide to Overcoming Procrastination. And on there, I periodically post what's essentially the equivalent of blog postings. And mm-hmm. those have been real well received so far because I try to make them kind of fun and, coming out of something in real life.
Mm-hmm.
They can also reach me at stopprocrastinating@comcast.net. And stop procrastinating is a bear of a word to type. But it just the word stop and then procrastinating, all one word, at comcast.net is the other way to catch me. And then my publisher, there is also, I also am the guest blogger periodically on the Complete Idiot's Guide series own blog.
Mm-hmm.
So you can also contact me through the Complete Idiot's Guide series is published through Penguin Books, mm-hmm. the Alpha Division, and so going on to their site is also a way to get to me or to read some blog postings that I do on there.
Mm-hmm.
They're bought by Random House, apparently, was just in the news
for
the last couple days, so we'll see who my publisher is.
Well, you know, I usually hit a point, I always hit a point in the show in which I say the clock is on us, and I've got to say to you, remember, before we went on air, I said, mm-hmm. we don't use the whole hour. Look at that clock.
We have
come really close, and you've been my only guest. I hope I haven't worn you out.
No, I've enjoyed it.
This has been exciting. You know, we always welcome comments and suggestions about the content and about our guests. And you who are listening, whether it's live or to the MP3, if you'd like to recommend a guest or be a guest yourself on Right Here, Right Now, just let me know. Send an email to whwnbusinessradiox@gmail.com. Thank you, Kevin, for handling the controls.
Thank you for always bringing on wonderful guests.
It's been great. And thank you to our guest, Dr. Michelle Tullier. Michelle, just one of your contact information, okay? One more time.
Sure. I'll do the email address because from there I can, share everything else with everyone. Stop procrastinating, STOP, and then another P. Can I say it without reading it? stop procrastinating at comcast.net. It's a .net, not a .com. And I'll be happy to speak with anyone that way and direct you accordingly.
Great. Thanks so much. Right Here, Right Now is brought to you each week by Right Choice Services. And you can learn more about Right Choice Services at its website, Right, WRITE, choiceservices.com. I hope you'll join us next week and tell your friends about the show. Send them an email. Invite them to listen live or to the downloads. Right here, right now, broadcast live every Tuesday morning at 10 Eastern Time at righterightnow.businessradiox.com. And the MP3 version is available later today. I'm Tim Morrison. Join us next time when business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals come together to discuss the power of the pen and its impact on their business right here, right now.